Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us today. My name is Eric.
And I'm Sam.
And today we are broadcasting you the psychology of today for a smarter tomorrow. Live from Waterloo on Radio Laurier, you're listening to the Scholars Podcast, the podcast by students for students, helping learners learn. On today's episode, procrastination and how you can make yourself more efficient. As students, we live busy lives, test to test, assignment from assignment. The stack can pile high. And with that can come burnout's quick. Motivations disappear and you find yourself scrolling through memes for hours. Is it fun? Absolutely. Efficient? Most absolutely not. Procrastination is a student's greatest downfall, and we're talking all about it today on the Scholars Podcast. Okay, hello, Sam.
Hello.
The laugh track and the clapping just stopped behind me, so that indicates the episode has started.
All right.
Let's get right into it with a little meme of the day. Now, Sam, you did not want to do this one for the episode today.
I declined to comment.
You declined it in all its respects, but I'll say it anyways. Okay, so the ego and the superego walk into a bar, okay? The bartender says, I'm going to need to see some ID. You hate it.
The joke works better if you're reading it.
So the id, the ID, I'm not going to get into it.
Yeah, jokes are like frogs. They die when you dissect them.
Let's just jump right into the episode here. What does procrastination look for you, Sam?
Well, to be real fun, I was going to talk about the actual definition of procrastination.
That's a rabbit hole and a half.
Well, actually, it's pretty short. Defined as the behavior to avoid doing something, some important task, or accomplish a task until a later time. So just putting anything off, that's a basic definition of procrastination.
I guess a rabbit hole would be procrastinating learning that actual definition.
Yeah, exactly.
I think procrastination for myself is last-minute assignments, kind of waiting until the very end, thinking that I have enough time, and then realizing a few minutes before it's due that I didn't have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
I waited too long.
Yeah, actually, I found an interesting study. It's actually called an evaluation of the Pomodoro Technique for stopping procrastination behavior change. We're going to talk about the Pomodoro Technique later.
Yep.
But in that article, they were talking about, so actually that's where I got the definition from. And they were talking about the different parts of procrastination. Very, very interesting article, by the way. We always say we're going to post in the show notes. We don't have any show notes yet, so hopefully...
We will eventually.
There will be show notes eventually. These things will be posted.
They will be there, yeah.
If you do want to find it, it's called An Evaluation of the Pomodoro Technique for Stopping Procrastination Behavior Change. I'm sure there's not too many with the same name. And in that, they're talking about... what was the thing you were saying again? It's been a long day.
The
thing of why you're procrastinating?
Oh, because I wait till the very last minute and I say, I got time.
Yeah, so the scheduling. So people often greatly underestimate how long it's going to take to do something, even if they've done it a bunch of times. There's some really interesting studies on that.
Well, that's why people keep being late.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, because they do it every day and they realize that they are late every day, but they still are late every day.
Yeah, yeah. And just people always underestimate how long something's going to take.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting part of procrastination in a sense of why you're handing things in late.
So we'll talk about the Pomodoro timer a little bit more later, but it's pretty good. Do you think it works for yourself?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of it.
You are religiously using it.
Not as much lately.
Not as lately?
Yeah.
See, you got me into it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I installed it on my computer, I installed it onto my phone, and yeah, no, it's...
Yeah, it's definitely super helpful.
It's quite the app.
Yeah. And so, something else from that study, they noted a couple major reasons for procrastination. So the two main reasons are fear of failure, leads to task aversion, and reduce your self-esteem. And that kind of this becomes a habit eventually. And the second reason is the anticipation of perceived mental pain or discomfort. So usually it's something you really don't want to do, and you're going to have that mental pain or discomfort doing it. So it's the anticipation of those things.
Yeah.
Tend to be the two main reasons for doing it, and then they'll get into how the Pomodoro technique actually breaks that down. We'll talk about that a bit later. A really interesting thing that they also had, too, is talking about motivation, the opposite of procrastination, and there's four main parts. So there's expectancy, value, impulsiveness, and delay, and so they actually have a formula of it in the article, And it is expectancy times value divided by impulsiveness multiplied by delay. And I was actually, because we had procrastinated a little bit on this. Well, I personally did. And right just before we started this, I was trying to read through this. And I'm not sure if it was written in a different language and then translated, but it was in pretty broken English. So I'm just going to try to read through this.
We'll do the best.
And you can kind of try to make it out for yourself. I'll do my interpretation. I just want you to kind of hear this. So expectancy refers to how much people's expectancy of the success and how much they expected to get the reward. That was the definition of expectancy.
A little broken English there.
Yeah, it's also a circular definition. You can't use the word in the definition. So I wasn't entirely sure on that one.
And I think that's what I was referring to when I was talking about the rabbit hole before. I think procrastination as a whole is not just procrastination. There's multiple underlying reasons as to why people procrastinate. And as to what the reasons why their motivation depletes. So I guess the biggest question would be, where does our motivation go? Right?
Yeah.
Well, I have actually, a little bit to talk. Do you have a little bit?
Yeah, I'm just going to finish off reading this out.
Little teaser trailer there.
Yeah, so there is, so talking about the expectancy and then the other parts too. So continuing reading this. So however, too much optimism and helplessness is not good, which may cause people to put off until last minutes. Last minutes, plural. Just like you. And then value involves the pleasantness of doing the task and the size of the reward. Making the task more rewarding and pleasant could increase the value of task and motivation. Impulsiveness is one of the biggest factors in the procrastination. This is really hard to read because I keep thinking I'm reading it wrong, but I'm reading it right. It's just written wrong. Factors in the procrastination, and it refers to people's ability to stay focused. Delay means how soon people could obtain a task's reward. It is usually very difficult for people. It is usually very difficult for people can change do about it. Therefore, the more expectancy and value, the more motivation people will have to complete the task. Which, or while more impulsiveness or delay may increase procrastination. So that may have been really, really hard to listen to, but kind of the gist of it was making sure that you have immediate rewards, you break it down to small chunks, and you get started on things as soon as possible. I'm still not sure what expectancy means. Do you have any guesses on that one?
I think that would be the reward.
Yeah? Because I think they're talking about value as reward. I think expectancy may be how sure you are you can complete it.
Expectancy refers to how much people's See, uses it twice.
Exactly. So it's a circular definition.
Expectancy refers to how much people's expectancy of the success and how much they expect to get the reward. That is just one messy way to say, when people have something laying at the end of the tunnel for them, they're going to make it through that tunnel.
Yeah, so I think
the bigger that reward, the more that they're going to be motivated to finish.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what it's saying, but the rest of the article wasn't as tricky to read. It was specifically this part, mostly with expectancy. I think that may be talking about how likely you think you are to succeed. So a big thing is breaking it into smaller chunks. But yeah, it's interesting to look at the little components of motivation and then keeping that in mind for yourself.
What does procrastination like actually look like for you? Like, give me some instances.
Oh, me not writing this, these articles over the break and then just doing it this morning.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times though, it can be problematic when you procrastinate and you do well on something.
And you know what? That's interesting you say that because I was actually going to say procrastination is almost a thrill when you're like, oh, I'm not going to do tonight. I can do it all tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be my busy day. I'm going to get so much done tomorrow. And I can do this because I've done it before. Because I've gotten a good grade on something I half-assed last time.
Exactly.
And you're right. Yeah. It is very dangerous.
Yeah, so
it just continues that cycle, right?
Exactly. And I think, too, is knowing how well you can do on something and then expecting yourself to do a certain degree. So maybe you're only expecting yourself to get a 70 in a class, so you can procrastinate and get a 70, but you can't really procrastinate and get a 90 a lot of times, unless you're a genius and you're procrastinating anyway, or it's a really, really easy class. In that case, it makes it harder to motivate yourself because that value doesn't really change.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so I put this off kind of over the break knowing that A, not a lot of people listen.
Well, we don't know, actually. We don't have the numbers.
So there could be thousands of you.
There could be thousands of people.
Millions.
I think that we may have a good... I'm going to take a wild guess. 32,000 people are listening right now.
Yeah, those are the official numbers. You just heard them right here.
Yeah, that's just my honest opinion. but three people that are listening are like, yeah.
So I guess like that kind of comes back to value and whatever expectancy means. So I wasn't expecting to have a lot on the line for this. You know, I definitely want these to be good and be informative for everyone listening. But, you know, if this was filmed in front of a live studio audience of tens of thousands of people, I'd be much, much more inclined to prepare.
So essentially, we didn't give two craps about this episode, is what we're saying.
Well, I'd say I gave like one and a half.
No, we care about the show. But yeah, no, I think it's also a mix of a lot of things. I mean, it was just a break, right? So, I mean, they call it a break, but they expect you to do work. It's kind of a, it's a little ironic there. It's called, a break, but it's also called a reading week. It's not really a break, is it?
Did you do much reading?
Nope, not at all. Oh. Yeah. That's why I call it more of a break than reading week.
Got some audiobooks down. But
where does our motivation go? Okay, so I found this really interesting study that I had no idea existed before. I was studying this yesterday. And it's called the Ego Depletion Theory. Now, this is done by two psychologists, Roy Baumeister and Diane Tick, in 1998. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and describe off the article that I read exactly the process of this study. So, they brought a large group of student volunteers into a room, leaving them unattended. Also in the room were two bowls, one filled with cookies and one filled with radishes. Yuck. Hate radishes.
You don't like radishes?
I don't like radishes.
Do you like cookies, though?
I do like cookies.
Oh.
Radishes are, like, oddly spicy.
Yeah.
Do you know? Ever, and I'm like a Spanish guy, so, like, I eat spiced foods, but it's oddly spicy.
But you've never eaten a radish like an apple?
Oh, my God. You are evil. So some of the students were told to only eat from radishes. Some were told to only eat from the cookie bowl. Then they were presented with a puzzle designed to be impossible to solve. They found that the cookie eaters attempted the puzzle an average of 19 minutes before giving up, whereas the radish eaters had an average of 8 minutes before giving up. That is freaking crazy. Yeah, the theory is that there's a sense of ego depletion going on there, saying we only have so much willpower and that motivation is lost if we overuse our willpower.
It's pretty interesting.
It is really interesting. When I read that, I was like, wow. That, you know what? That accounts for a lot of the things as to why I procrastinate.
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny, speaking of procrastination, I woke up this morning and saw that you wrote that, and I kind of had a little heart attack because I thought, I didn't see the other part you'd written, and I thought we were just talking about ego depletion. And ego depletion in psychology is kind of famous or infamous for not replicating and kind of being debunked. I'm doing air quotes here, by the way. Yeah. So I was looking at this, I was like, oh no, we're talking about, you know, this thing that's been debunked. But so when I started reading more into it, I realized, or I found this really, really good article from Science News Direct, and is titled "Ego Depletion Failures to Replicate Doesn't Necessarily Mean There Is No Ego Depletion." And so reading through the article, it showed that there have been studies that have shown ego depletion, like yours. There's ones that have shown no ego depletion, and there was actually, so the one that showed no ego depletion was a very big study. It was over 2,000 people. Really well done study by the Royal Society of Open Science. That was the journal that published it. Royal Society of Open Science just sounds really fancy, so I assume it's true. And so they showed no effect. And there was even another study that was done that looked at different cultures in ego depletion, and it showed that Indian participants showed reverse ego depletion.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Whereas Western participants showed actual ego depletion.
I think there's a lot of factors. I think one of the biggest control factors, the problem with the study by Baumeister and Tick, is that the puzzle was impossible to fail. So no matter how long they spent on it, it was going to be bound to fail. They were going to be bound to fail.
Well, they didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it depends on the puzzle that's presented to them, right? Because there's different variations of the ego depletion study. Mm-hmm. Another one presents them with the Stroop task,
mm-hmm.
whereas this one is a puzzle that's absolutely impossible to mm-hmm. solve, right?
Well, they were just looking at how long they were going to attempt it.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Stroop task is much easier than like a puzzle.
What's the Stroop task again?
So the Stroop task is... why is it blanking? I want to say it's the audio one, but that's a dichotic listening task. Now, the Stroop task is the one where you Pretty sure it involves letters.
Oh, yeah, you just have to match the color of the word. So you have to do, it's like, you press right if it matches and you press left if it doesn't.
No. So it's like the color is spelled out, like the word red is presented, but in blue coloring.
Yeah.
And then it goes like through a list of other colors like that.
Yeah.
And then you have to go ahead and I think you have to read out the actual color that it's painted in, not the actual what it says. So that's a strip test there.
Okay.
So, there are different methods to test the ego depletion, right? So I think it all depends on that, too.
Wait, one of them uses a strip test?
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. Do you know how that related to ego depletion?
I think it was just motivation? A cognitive task that they were trying to test after depleting their willpower, right?
Okay, so there's like cognitive performance relates to willpower.
Yeah. Oh, is that a theory? Are you going to patent it?
Oh, I just hadn't heard that. So going back to that, and then the other study that you were looking at was the one that was talking about the interpretation, right?
Which one?
So the perception?
Perception. Let me go and find that. See, there is that procrastination showing. So the perception, so it's all done through perception. Something to reinforce the ego depletion theory. It's a study done by Veronica Job, Carol S. Dweck, and Gregory M. Walton, tested if ego depletion theory was all perceptual and led different groups of participants of their study to different perceptions. Some were led to believe that motivation was a limited resource, where others were led to believe that it was not a limited resource. So the results are as such, and this is coming from an article, again, in our show notes. In a classic laboratory paradigm, you like how I said laboratory there?
Laboratory.
Only people who thought of or who were led to think of willpower as a limited resource showed ego depletion. By contrast, for people who had or were led to adopt a non-limited resource theory, a demanding initial task did not undermine subsequent performance. In one study, the demanding task actually raised their subsequent performance. Perceived exhaustion mediated the effects of the depletion manipulation in the limited resource condition. This finding is consistent with research showing that depletion effects are better predicted by people's perception of depletion than by an actual depletion experience.
Mm-hmm. And that being said, none of these are entirely conclusive. It's a relatively new thing of people coming to this finding, but it does seem to be definitely the case, at least in my experience. Everything we've seen so far really does seem to support that. But again, take everything with a grain of salt. But I think that just goes to show that people need to adopt this kind of mindset of getting things done and not letting, I guess, their emotions get in the way.
Yeah.
And then also,
it's mind over matter.
Yeah. And then also kind of how you talk to yourself, so your self-talk, being more positive throughout the day. So really good thing that I like to do is make my bed every morning. Like, not very nice, just, put it together. Not that I'm super organized or anything. It's just one little win for the day actually starts to start your day off right. So it has that positive or reverse ego depletion. Yeah, so it'd be kind of a reverse ego depletion. When you do one little thing, you feel more empowered to do the next thing. Eating a healthy breakfast, maybe taking a cold shower. Once you get all these things done, you've already done these, and you feel much more confident moving forward.
Cold showers.
Yes.
Are they fun?
I don't know if I'd use the word fun. They wake you up. It's like, do I enjoy working out? Yes. Do I think it's fun? Not necessarily, especially I hate squats. Do I like foam rolling my legs out? No, it hurts a lot, but do I do it? Yes. And,
in my past time, I just foam roll.
For anyone who doesn't know what foam rolling is, it's taking like a circular tube of foam and then moving your body over it. It tends to be pretty painful.
I actually think it's really relaxing, foam rolling. On the back.
Oh, yeah, maybe the back.
The back is on your legs? So, yeah, well, the quads, yeah. No, it feels good there too, though.
Really?
Yeah, I think it feels good.
Ooh.
Get a stretch out there.
Maybe you need to apply more pressure because it's supposed to hurt, I think.
Are you sure it's supposed to hurt?
It's pretty painful.
Are you hurting yourself? Maybe you're doing it wrong.
It's like most stretching. It's supposed to be on the edge of hurting.
Let's take a poll. Guys, vote down below. just kidding. We don't have
click somewhere, but we don't have foam rolling. Anyway, sidebar on that one. So
I think you were going to talk about mindfulness.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty powerful thing.
It's, yeah.
Like, again, mind over matter.
Yeah.
I grew up with that that mentality. I was raised like that.
Yeah.
And it goes a long way. I think realizing that you are in much more control than you believe you are.
Yeah, my one football coach actually throughout high school, Coach Hitch. Shout out to Coach Hitch.
Shout out.
He's the best. He actually played at Laurier too. I think he was like MVP at Laurier when he played.
Shout out times two.
Yeah. But he always said to everyone, life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond. And at the time, being in high school, I kind of got it, but now more and more, realizing how it applies to life and how it's actually being proven psychologically. And what we were talking about before is mind over matter and realizing that you don't really have to do what your emotions tell you to do. Like, if you get angry at someone, you don't have to hit them. And, you know, you shouldn't do that. You know, there's laws against those kinds of things. You know, if we just acted on all of our emotions, the world would be a pretty chaotic place.
Well, emotions are very raw. And emotions are very drastic. So, yeah, I mean, if we live by our emotions, we'll never make smart decisions, you know? We got to think with our head sometimes.
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 Sometimes got to think with
emphasis on sometimes. Sometimes, though, you do need to think with your emotions.
Yeah. You just got to feel how you feel.
Yeah. Just test. You got to take it day by day, you know? Yeah,
I'm going to quote you on that one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, what was I saying?
I don't know. Something about
that was really
Coach Hitch. I don't know, dude.
Anyway, so feeling with our emotions, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Coach Hitch, 90% what happens to you or how you react. Yeah, so a lot of people kind of know this, but still act in a way that their emotions are real and they have to listen to them. So when people say, like, I can't do that, I'm tired. Like, you can still do it.
You're choosing not to.
You just don't want to because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And mindfulness is a really good way to kind of get over this. So with mindfulness, a lot of times the one I do, which actually last episode we talked about Headspace and then Sam Harris's app, and I said I wasn't a big fan. I've done more of it now, and I actually really, really like it. And he talks about being able to frame emotions as a physiological just occurrence. Like, if you're feeling angry and you're kind of sitting quietly, and what does anger feel like? It's just a pattern of feelings that are happening in your body, like an itch.
Yeah.
And you can ignore an itch and not scratch it. And then once you kind of start to be able to be aware of these and really frame it as like, oh, I'm experiencing anger.
Oh, yeah. Framing is everything. I mean, I think you touched briefly on it like a quick second ago. But I realize a lot of times where I procrastinate most is when the point in the day where I say, I'm so tired.
Mm-hmm.
Everything goes downhill. I start shutting down. I start saying no more work today.
Yeah.
And I don't get what I have to get done.
Yeah, a big problem with that is that you're identifying with it. Yeah. You're saying, I am tired. Not, I'm experiencing tiredness. You know.
Framing. It's all about the framing.
Exactly. And then framing it as an experience rather than identifying with it. Because the big thing is identifying with it. So, like, what is tired? Like, your eye, you can feel it in your
eyelids.
Well,
when there, here's your face. The other thing. There's emotional tired, and then there's, like, I don't want to do it. And then there's physical tired, where you actually don't get enough sleep, right? A lot of times, from my point anyway, it's emotional tired. Like, it's like, oh, I just had a presentation today, and I depleted most of my, you know, most of, I know, I'm going back to these iffy, don't laugh, Sam. I depleted a lot of my motivation into this one thing.
Because you believed in it.
Now I don't want to do anything else. So it's all about the framing there. And because I ignored the cookies on my way out the cafe, too.
And because you believe
And because I ate radishes, too. So.
Well, radishes are great. But
radishes,
anyway.
We are going to disagree with that.
Just kidding. I don't actually like radishes.
I can just see you chomping on raw radishes.
True. But also, I just want to bring up again that the fact that you, at the time, or still maybe believe in ego depletion... If you didn't believe in ego depletion at the time, you may have not had that.
Yeah.
And another thing, too, is that ties back to actually listening to your emotions. What was I saying before? I keep getting sidetracked.
You were talking about,
Oh, identifying with your emotions, yes. Yeah. And then you were talking about how there's the physical and emotional feeling.
Yeah.
When you start doing more mindfulness and meditation, you realize that those aren't actually different. Because emotions, you feel. Like, there is a sensation of them. It's kind of all the same. I'm not really that good at explaining it. I'd recommend checking out the Sam Harris course.
Okay.
And it is a... There's, like, I think 10 or 3 days... There's, like, a free trial, and then you have to pay. But he's actually set it up that if you can't afford it, just email him and kind of explain why, and then you get it for free, because he wants it to be available to everyone, because... He stands behind it, you know, it's such a powerful tool.
So he ties together something like emotional tiredness and physical tiredness and says that it's all in the mind and that's all about perception?
No. Well, they're both perceptions. So, yeah, I guess in a sense it is all in the mind, but how...
Well, I mean, mental perception about being emotionally tired versus being actually physically tired. A physical thing that you physically feel.
Yeah, those are kind of the same thing.
You think?
Yeah.
How so? I'm gonna have to disagree with you.
So, being like emotionally tired, or you know, feeling tired, what that really is, a lot of times it's like a pattern of feelings in your face, in your body. If you pay attention to why you're feeling tired, it ties back to physical sensations. So when you're really sitting and thinking about it, again, I'm not very good at explaining this. Sam Harris would be a lot better, but you start to realize that there really isn't that difference, and that you can just kind of not ignore them, but notice that they're happening, and then not choosing to identify with them. And then once you are framing it and not identifying with it, it's a lot easier to move forward and say, "Oh, I'm experiencing tired. Like it's an itch. It doesn't have to be." I am tired.
Okay, so you're saying that they're in one and the same, though after somebody comes to that realization, though.
Yeah.
So the thing is, the majority of people haven't come to that realization, right? So
yeah.
I guess, what should we tell people who, I guess, are trying to get to that point?
Well, first of all, realizing that, you know, kind of looking back at the ego depletion and its mindset. So ego depletion exists if you believe it exists. Otherwise, it does not exist. And actually, reverse ego depletion is also real. So the more you do, the more motivated you feel. That's also true if you believe in it.
Right.
And then not, you know, personally identifying with all your emotions. So first off, just realizing that that's possible and that you don't have to be stuck in, and I kind of hate to say this, but, you know, the matrix in air quotes. Realizing that, you know, every time
a can of worms.
Yeah, every time you feel a feeling, it's not what you actually have to do. You know, people are always living in like, oh, I'm angry, so I did this. It's like, no, you choose to do that because you were feeling angry. You don't have to do that. You have to choose to, you know, go eat food if you're hungry. You can just sit and not eat food. You can if you want to.
But for how long, though?
You could starve yourself to death. you literally, like, there's people who do it, like, do
that. I think that's contradictory, strikes. Though. Then you'll kill yourself.
Yeah, but you're choosing to.
So, okay.
Do you get what I'm saying about how there's the choice?
I don't think I get it. I think it's because, because I'm like I said, like, the majority of people haven't separated the physical and the emotional. So I guess maybe...
Because
we'll have to download this Sam Harris app, and then we'll have to...
Yeah, or just actually any sort of meditation generally gets into this, and then you'll start to experience it for yourself. I think Sam Harris does a really good job of sort of explaining these little more esoteric topics.
Who is Sam Harris?
He is a very prominent spiritual atheist. So he talks about consciousness, spirituality, and he's actually a pretty controversial figure. Because he is against a lot of religions and is very outspoken against them. And a lot of the things he says, people take offense to. There's a lot of people that don't really like him. Really interesting guy.
So his app, what's his app?
It's just a meditation app. It's just guided meditations. He does a lot of other stuff on the side. He's a published author. He's very... big podcast too, and then he also does some sort of speaking engagements and lectures and things like that, and he's been on a number of talk shows, and he's gotten to a lot of hot water with, you know, discussing these things in public, and then people getting mad about it, and then, you know, getting into verbal disagreements.
Getting angry, as people do.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, he doesn't get angry. It's usually someone, I think it was Ryan Reynolds, was, like, screaming at him on a talk show, and he's just kind of sitting there, just, like, not really reacting to it. And that kind of just goes to show, you know, people giving into their emotions. Not saying that he's right or Ryan Reynolds is a bad person, but just showing that you don't have to give into your anger. You know, I think it's Ryan Reynolds, some A-list celebrity actor, just starts freaking out at him and doesn't know how to separate their emotions from their actions. And, you know, being able to frame them as like, oh, I'm feeling angry right now, and not...
It's Ben Affleck.
Oh, it was Ben Affleck. Yeah. I just like Ryan Reynolds. Ben Affleck's okay, too. Yeah. But yeah, and I found that's been really, really important in my day-to-day of just saying, I'm experiencing tired, or I'm experiencing this, and then not acting on it. So, for example, if you need to go work out or go, you know, write a paper, you may be truly physically tired, but you can still do it. There is very few times when you physically can't do something. Yeah. And that actually kind of ties into another point that I wanted to make is I found a really, really interesting article in the Globe and Mail called Why Are Athletes Able to Speed Up When They See the Finish Line? So a lot of times you'll see this in very intense long distance athletic events where I think this person was running like an obscene amount of distance through the desert. It was some extreme endurance thing, and then you see him sprinting and like really, really picking up speed the last few kilometers. And it's like, how do people do these kinds of things? Mm-hmm. And what they've seen is professional athletes, yes, they're much, much better shape, but a big difference too is that they're able to push themselves to their physical limit or very, very close to it, whereas regular athletes or just regular people don't push themselves even that close to where their physical limits are. I think they did a different study where they're measuring how much energy potential is left in the muscle. I'm not entirely sure on this one, not sure how they did that, but they were showing that professional athletes were able to completely deplete their energy stores, whereas regular people, they left a lot on the table. Mm. And so he kind of went more into this and showing that a really big part of being able to push yourself is your mindset. And being able to go past the pain. So what he got people to do, wall sits. Have you heard of wall sits?
Yeah.
Not fun. So it's like you're sitting on an invisible chair against the wall, really hard on your legs. And so what he would do is you'd pay people either a few cents or a few dollars for every 20 seconds they endured. And no surprise, the people who were offered more money sat for a lot longer because they had that incentive.
Well, I remember in grade school, in grade eight, We every gym class we would have like a fitness teacher come in, and she would be really competitive with it. So the one time she was like, "All right, whoever," I think there was no reward even anyways. She was just trying to see who out of the roster of my grade eight class could hold out into a wall sit,
yeah,
the longest.
Yeah.
And yeah, your motivation peaks when, you know, you have, you know, the girl that you see to the side of you, your crush in grade eight, looking at you and watching, see if you'll, like, finish last. Yeah, no, you get a little bit of motivation. There's a little bit of a perception there, too. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
You do want to finish last, absolutely.
Exactly.
Wall sits, are you good at them?
I don't really do them. I haven't really tried.
No.
If you paid me, I'd do it.
Yeah.
I'd do it for a very long time.
If you I have paid 20 me bucks in my wallet.
There we go.
Right now.
So, yeah, this article goes on. There is one specific person doing a lot of the research into this. And they were saying that, you know, this was showing that a lot of it is in your brain, not just in your muscles. Obviously, Olympic athletes are stronger and faster than the rest of us. Not saying that it's entirely in your brain, but a good chunk of it is. And so, yeah, the big difference is the balance between perceived effort and motivation. So they did some pretty interesting things of rigging a clock to go slower. So it'd be counting like 1 second, 2 second, three mm-hmm. seconds, and then they slowed it down to 1 second, 2 second, 3 second. Mm-hmm. And the people who were doing a cycle till exhaustion test went 18% longer than the cyclist with the regular clock, just because they thought it was going slower. And they also did this where there is people in like a heat training thing, and they changed the thermometer, show it was cooler, and people would just push themselves more, showing that a lot of people just leave a lot on the table, and you can do more if you choose to. If you push yourself, if you have those beliefs, and you have that kind of reverse ego depletion, and if you can push yourself a lot further than you think you can. And one of the really interesting things that actually ties back into meditation was what he did is he took a group of Navy SEAL recruits. So again, not a random sample of the population here, but a pretty interesting case study. And he put them through an 8-week mindfulness training program, teaching them techniques rooted in Buddhist meditation. So again, that's the stuff you'd find in Headspace or Sam Harris or anything on YouTube, some regular mindfulness meditation. And he saw brain changes, he saw changes in brain patterns after the mindfulness training that mimicked the patterns of elite endurance racers, an indication that it may be possible to directly train the brain to better handle adversity and physical discomfort. So this kind of ties in back to what we were saying before, is when you start meditating, you're able to just ignore the physical pain of doing these things. Like, I don't want to do this, but I'm just going to do that. And that's almost a superpower in today's world, where there's so many resources and opportunities at our fingertips that we just don't do because we don't feel like it.
Yeah.
And if you're able to push through that, you have a huge advantage over other people. So I think that part is really, 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 really interesting.
Yeah, no, mindfulness is proven to be successful in efficiency. And I have a little bit of a study here, and I'll just read right off the article. How do you say that word? Preponderance.
Oh yeah, I saw that one.
A preponderance.
What is that word?
I don't know. Actually, I was about to. I was like breathing into like start talking. Anyways, a preponderance of evidence shows that mindfulness, as both a dispositional trait and as a skill-based training, can reduce patient-reported symptoms and improve coping across many physical health conditions. In addition, some studies have shown that both trait mindfulness and mindfulness training can buffer emotional and psychological reactions to stress, providing one plausible biological mechanism for protecting against stress-related diseases such as hypertension.
Yeah. Okay,
it's all in the mind there. It's in the pudding. That's coming from an article published by Jeffrey Greeson and Gabrielle Chin.
Well, you did a better job reading that than I did on my broken English one. That was that was brutal. I'm sorry for that one. Actually, this kind of ties into
translated from like Cambodian.
I don't know. But the weird thing is from a British university.
So maybe it was. Maybe you have to read it with a British
accent. I don't know.
Why don't you go back and read it in a British accent?
I don't want to do that. Yeah. There's a few people that would be very unhappy with my British accent. It's not good.
Actually, sidetrack. Actually, no, that's a little controversial. But I was debating with a friend maybe a few months ago, and it was the question was, is doing an accent, if you're not originally, you know, native to that accent, is that a form of, you know, racism? Is that a form of discriminate against those people who actually have that accent?
I think a lot's the intention. If you're being derogatory,
then, that's exactly what I said too. Yeah.
But then again, it's also the people of that culture. Are they getting really offended? And then, because if you're a person who's doing an impression of another culture and you're saying, but I'm not being offensive, and the people of that culture are getting offended, you don't always get to choose if you're being a dick or not. Other people get a say in that as well.
That's exactly what I said. Like, you can be a dick, absolutely, but you can also, you know, do it in terms of respect.
Anyways,
you know?
But kind of going back to the mind over matter thing, have you ever heard of Jocko Willink?
Mm-mm, no. Who's that?
So he's a former Navy SEAL commander. And
Jocko Willink?
Yeah.
That's definitely not a
Jocko Willink?
That's not an American name. Jocko?
I'm not sure what kind of name. He is a terrifying looking human being.
What's
he looks exactly really? What you think a Navy SEAL commander would look like.
Oh no, he is American.
He is a mountain of a human being.
Oh, Jocko. Like Jock with an O at the end.
No, Jock. I think Jock would be J-O-C-K-O.
Yeah, that's how you spell it.
I thought it was...
No, look.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that makes sense. Jocko, yeah.
Yeah, so Jocko, I'm not sure what nationality that would be, but interesting name.
He looks quite terrible.
Yeah, and I think he gets up at 4:30 a.m. every day, and he's like in his 40s or 50s or something.
Mark Wahlberg also does that, eh?
Yeah.
A lot of celebrities.
This is the 5 a.m. club.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's a big proponent of, you know, if you don't want to do something, just... That's nice, but you should just do it anyway.
he's like, shut up and do it.
Exactly. He's a very no-nonsense kind of guy. Really, really good if you want a bit of, like, kick-in-the-ass motivation. Maybe not the best if you're having a really bad day and you want someone to be understanding. But he's very, very good. And he actually has a really good alarm, like an alarm... soundbite that I've used as my alarm.
What is it?
It's on Spotify, but it's... I'm not sure if you can get it outside of Spotify, and it's literally just him in a very aggressive voice counting backwards from 10. He's like, you have 10 seconds to get out of bed, and counts backwards. And then he's saying, if you're not out of bed at this point, and then goes on like this... I don't want to say tirade, but this very stern lecture... of why you need to get out of bed. And actually, today is the first day that I've actually stayed in bed past the time I'm supposed to since I've got that.
Okay, let's, I think I found it here. Let's see if this works.
Get out of bed when it goes off. That's it. Is it easy? No. Everyone likes that warm bed. Everyone needs just 5 more minutes of slumber in the morning. So they hit snooze.
Is this the same one? There's like background music on me.
Get up and get going. I don't give in to the temptation of the warm blankets and soft pillow.
Yeah, so it's pretty much that. Minus he's counting backwards and there isn't like the background music. But he's really, really good for motivation.
That was really funny to me. I don't know why. Like that was like scary funny.
Oh yeah, it's a good way to start the day, just being absolutely terrified. He's also really good to, you know, put a few of those tracks into your workout playlist, then halfway through his voice comes on. But yeah, no, he spent a lot of time in the military and is very, very highly regarded, and just kind of taking those lessons he's learned and then applying them to other areas of life. And yeah, he's a big proponent of the reverse ego depletion. Make your bed in the morning, do the little things so you feel good about yourself, so you want to get those little victories so you move forward and you're not, you know, because...
It's all about the little wins, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what keeps you going, the little things.
Yeah, he's a big proponent of make your bed every single morning and have those little wins.
What do you think is the best little win in the day?
I'd say making your bed first thing.
Yeah, you think so.
Yeah, it's really easy to do. And like first thing before you even leave your room, anything else happens, it's a good way to set your mindset for getting things done. Yeah, I'd say that'd be my favorite one of the day. Cold showers too, because you're just blatantly making yourself do something you don't want to do. Like it's very physically uncomfortable.
Yeah.
No one enjoys cold. Like kind of what we were saying. Cold showers aren't fun. You don't do them because they're fun. You do them because they're not fun.
There's some health benefits, too.
Yeah. I think there's you don't dry some... out your skin. It's good for your hair and stuff. I'm not sure how concrete the...
What I've been doing is usually I shower with scorching hot water.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been slowly trying to do is, like, you know, flip it over to, like, cold, like, for, like, 5 seconds and then go back to, like, warm. Just ease into it. Or do you just go for the... You just slam yourself with that Arctic front.
No, I start kind of warm and then just shower off because usually I'm like kind of like half awake too. Just like do like the regular showering hair and all that.
Yeah.
And then, we'll get like go pretty cold and that's very, very uncomfortable. And then in over like a 30-second period to a minute, it's not as cold anymore. And then you go a bit colder. The way mine's set up, though, it goes so cold that it will, like, physically hurt. So I'm not able to go all the way cold on this shower at my place. But, yeah, it gets pretty intense. So I'll just kind of go to where I can't really take it anymore. And there definitely is, like, I
Here's some benefits of it. I just Googled benefits of cold showers. So take this with the largest grain of salt. There's a very funny stock image beside it. So I don't know how.
It's on medicaldaily.com.
It's the first thing that popped up, though. I usually don't trust the first thing that pops up. Anyways, but it increases your alertness, refines hair and skin, improves immunity and circulation. Again, big grain of salt. Stimulates weight loss, speeds up muscles.
Did you say stimulates?
Yep, stimulates
weight loss. Oh, stimulates. Simulates weight loss.
Like you're bringing pretend. Simulation. You pretend to go, yeah, okay. It erases stress. It relieves depression. See, this is what I'm talking about. I shouldn't have read those, but big grain of salt there. But yeah, there's some good stuff with cold showers there.
Yeah, I think psychologically there's a huge benefit to it as well. Yeah. Just making yourself do things you don't want to do, and then getting over that, and you realize, you know, it's not that bad.
So Sam, actually, I wanted to ask you for a couple reasons. One, we've run out of content, and we still have 15 minutes to go.
There's actually something I didn't put on here of. Not dichotomy of control, locus of control, but we'll come back to that later. Would you want to ask?
So another thing that I find also helps me with keeping myself motivated, keeping myself task to task without losing motivation or efficiency would be using the agenda. And then another form I find of writing your schedule out would be writing your emotions out. So journaling. And I know you're really big into journaling. So how do you think journaling plays into procrastination?
I think it's really important to do self-reflection and really set into clearly set out what your goals are, the larger goals that really, really motivate you, and then break them down into month by month, week by week, day to day, so you can attach what you're doing today to that bigger picture in the future. So why am I going to the gym now? Is so I say I don't get Alzheimer's in the future, you know, I don't have a heart attack at age 60. All these very, very big picture things, kind of what we're going back to when we're first talking about those four things that were responsible for motivation. What was one of them? Delay? And I forget what the exact wording on it was. But, you know, it's hard to stay motivated when the reward is so far away. And I'm trying to think, where was it? Yeah, delay. So they're saying it was delay. So, you know, a lot of these rewards aren't very close by. They are years and years and years down the road that you're doing now. So keeping that, you know, etched in your mind. Why am I doing this? What's going to happen? What's going to happen if I don't? And then also reflecting on if you set out your agenda for the day or your calendar and you had all these things planned out and they don't happen. Why didn't they happen? What happened? What were your thoughts? And then reflecting on that each day, because, you know, even the most disciplined people, like say Jocko, he often says, he's a very flawed, he always says, like, I'm a flawed individual. I'm not perfect, but every day I try to get a little bit better.
Dude, he is a scary guy.
Oh my God. Yeah. And even
how'd you find him?
I think he was on Tim Ferriss' show, but yeah, I think that's where he got kind of a big breakout. But yeah, pretty interesting dude, but he's saying even at times he's lazy. He's always fighting laziness. You know, he may be, his Instagram is literally his, every day he posts his watch when he gets up, and it's between like 4 a.m. and 4:30. And then he goes and he has a gym in his garage and he does like an intense workout. And he's in his 40s or 50s and just does brutal workouts every morning at like 4 a.m. It's, yeah, but even he's saying that he deals with these things.
That's painful to even think about, to be honest.
Exactly. But pain isn't real.
No.
Pain don't hurt. And
what do you mean pain isn't real?
Pain's not real.
Oh, there you go again. You're over that class you're taking. How is that class, though?
What class?
The critical thinking.
Oh, it's not related to that. It's just about argumentation. Oh. Yeah, completely. I know. It's not what you think it is.
Yeah, because have you arguments. Found yourself overly critical?
Well, yeah, I did before the class.
So how did the class kind of help you?
It's just about argument structuring. Like, it's not really related to what you think it would be. I thought it was going to be something different, but I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah,
but
okay. It's not really related. Yeah, I know what you mean. A lot of courses do that, where they're deceptive on their title and their description, and then you kind of get something else.
Yeah, but anyway, back to locus of control. This is a really interesting topic as well. And I definitely looked at some studies. I forgot to put them into here. So what the locus of control is, it's your belief in your ability to accomplish something and actually enact change in your life. So if someone were to have a larger locus of control, they believe they can actually get a number of things done. People with a smaller locus or no locus of control, they don't believe they can get anything done. So, for example, someone who hasn't been very successful in their life, their parents were not successful, their friends aren't successful, they don't believe, and they're told their entire life they're not going to be successful. They don't believe that they have control over these things. But when you start getting them to do little things like make their bed in the morning, you know, have these little wins, they realize that, oh, I can actually do these things. They expand their locus of control. And this concept is actually covered pretty well in Smarter, Faster, Better. I always get the title wrong because it's like that other song. What's that song? Smarter, Better, Faster, Stronger?
There's a Kanye version, then there's a Daft Punk.
Yeah, so it sounds so it's Smarter, Faster, Better. That's a really interesting book about motivation and productivity. And that's where I kind of found out about this concept of the locus of control and being able to expand your locus of control. And they started to implement this in the Marines, I believe it is. And they follow someone who, you know, was kind of a deadbeat and then joined the Marines and how they showed him to take control of his life through the locus of control. Anyone listening to this is interested in this topic, I'd really recommend that book. It's a good starting place to kind of jump off.
What's the book again?
Smarter, Faster, Better.
And as soon as we get those show links, then we'll add that in.
Yeah, it's by Charles Duhigg, and it's like the new, most recent one's like an orange cover with a little person on it. But yeah, that area is really, really interesting as well.
Yeah, no, I think procrastination is a pretty wide range of causes and reasons as to why we procrastinate. I think it's really interesting. It's kind of unlock yourself and unlock your psyche. Dive deep.
Yeah, that is recommended.
Dive deep.
I think Freud said that, didn't he? So actually there was a few other things I was going to talk about the Pomodoro Technique. We've been jumping around a little bit.
Again, there's that procrastination showing. This episode's so all over the place. We'll call it the botched episode.
I think it's been going pretty well.
It's been all right.
Back to the study that I was referencing earlier, an evaluation of the Pomodoro Technique for stopping procrastination behavior change. And this was done at the University of Birmingham, by the way. So, again, not really sure on the broken English. But it's recommended for the Pomodoro Technique, which you can get the app, you can get on your phone, you can get a physical timer, I believe. And so it generally goes for about 25 to 40 minutes of focused working. You're not doing anything else. You're just doing your work. And then you get a break between 5 to 10 minutes. It's not recommended to exceed 40 minutes because it may be harder for you to focus. And again, really depends on the individual. I find, 25 is kind of my max. I don't have a very long attention span. But if you're a Zen master, maybe 40 minutes, who knows. But the break is recommended 5 to 10 minutes, not to go over 10 minutes because this may interrupt the rhythm of concentration, is how they put it. A little bit on the specifics of that, and they were saying one of the limitations of the Pomodoro Technique is it's good for simple tasks, and that's generally how I use it, say, for studying. If you're studying with someone, I find it quite useful. Do some focused studying for 25 minutes, don't talk about anything else.
Actually, I figure that when we study, when we use the Pomodoro timer, that's when I'm most effectively efficient.
So yeah, and like if you feel like going off topic or, checking your phone or anything, just put it off until the Pomodoro is done. And if you have the Chrome extension, it'll be counting down, and I find that's really, really helpful. I find it's usually about like 10 minutes left, so 15 minutes in, I'll be like, oh man, how much longer is this? I want to check my phone or something. Again, phone addiction, we talked about that.
Last episode?
2 episodes ago?
No, it was last episode, but then we had the break. So okay. It feels like 2 weeks ago, but it was last episode,
If you want to check your phone, get a drink of water, do something else, or talk to your friend, you thought of something unrelated that you want to check out, put that off until the Pomodoro is done, and then do it then. And I find that's a really helpful when you realize that you're giving yourself that time. So it's really helpful to put that 5 to 10 minutes. And again, there's more of that in the study that we're going to be posting somewhere.
Eventually. We'll get those show links.
Yeah.
And I think that wraps up our episode, doesn't it, Sam?
We still got 7 minutes.
Still got 7 minutes. I think we started a little bit early.
Okay.
We have the next show after us. They have to come in and they have to set up. Be sure to tune into them. They are lovely people. And let's do our outro here.
All right.
So that wraps up our episode for today. We hope you learned something new. We covered lots, and if you wanted to check out what we talked about more in depth, you can check out our show link below to visit all the references we use in today's episode. If you liked our episode, share us with your friends, and remember, you can find our previous episodes on RadioLaurier.com. Be sure to join us next episode, that's Wednesday, March 6th, where we are joined by University of Waterloo professor Randy Harris to talk about cognitive psychology and how linguistics touch our psyche. You don't want to miss that. I'm fairly excited to have him on.
Very excited.
Yeah. Signing off, my name is Eric.
And I'm Sam.
And this has been your Psychology Today for a Smarter Tomorrow. It's students helping students on the Scholars Podcast. Thank you and good night.